Conspiracy Worldwide Radio. Time to get out a major league guest. Now he's the ruiner of major artist careers, but he's also one of the most prevalent and hardworking men in the whole music industry. Peter Rosenberg, welcome back to Conspiracy Worldwide Radio.
Oh man, long time, guys.
Yeah, exactly, man. Long, long time. And of course, the current climate at the moment, I mean, your name's everywhere. Are you happy?
Sure. The conversation that's being had annoys me a little bit, but anytime there's a good dialogue going on about hip hop, you know, I'm not mad.
Yeah. Now, for all those people that are unaware, I think most of our listeners will be aware, it's been pretty much all over the same blogs which started all this in the first place. Is the case, of course, that yourself and the people on your show out there on Hot 97 have said a few things, said a few words, a few judgments. It's your show, you have your opinions, that's what people love the show for. However, some names were named and a lot of people kind of stood back. And one particular name, of course, he was on our last episode, Sean Price got involved. Now, the whole thing is, we were talking Major League and Minor League, and your co-host Ebro said that a few artists are Minor League, an artist including Sean Price, and I think there was a few as like Joey Badass was named up in there.
Flatbush Zombies.
Yep. And of course Ebro's not on the call with us now, but the context of that, has it been taken out of context, or has the context been taken, is what I'm asking you. Is this what was said? Is this truth?
It is true that it was said, but it was out of context in that he really didn't mean to include Sean Price in that group. He was kind of like, as he described it to me, he was trying to name some different people who had a movement. So he included Sean Price, but really, in retrospect, he didn't really mean that Sean Price was in that same category as far as being minor league, because Sean Price started done the minor leagues years and years ago, and he didn't really mean to include him in that sense. Although I talked to Sean Price the other day, and I said, listen, he didn't mean that about you. I said, but I'll be honest, between me and you, I know you don't care about being in the major leagues. You don't have any interest in that. You're a major league MC, but you don't really like playing in the big time. And he totally understood and agreed. So it was one of those things that part of it got sort of blown out of proportion in a larger conversation about hip hop. But I don't think Ebro's a Sean Price fan. Over the last few years when him and I talk hip hop, and I'm kind of, fighting for the cause of the artist that I really like with him, because he's also our program director. Sean Price is one of those few people that he always has been really impressed by. So I absolutely knew he meant no insult by it.
Do you not feel, though, this opened a door that a lot of these blogger people who you on your show have now, actually, if you voiced your opinions about certain people who've spread this and added fuel to the fire, don't you think it opened a door for these bloggers, though, to have an attack they've been waiting for? They've been waiting for that moment to have a go at you. You're doing things they want to do in life. You've been doing things they want to do in life. You've got there through hard work, as you've said on your show. Do you feel, though, that they just jumped in on this one? It wasn't about what Ebro said this. This was about the bloggers, the PC community, attacking you and attacking you for being on Hot 97.
Yeah, I think I was it to a certain extent. It was sort of silly. I have respect for the people who kind of were a big part of this conversation, but I believe that, a lot of people who are in the blogging part of it would really love to do the radio part of it, because as much credence as we all give the blog world, I think we know deep down there's kind of an extra level of respect for the people who are willing to grind hard enough. Not to say it's not a job or anything like that, but there's not a blogger out there who worked as hard as the people who got on the radio, at least at that part of it. I'm not saying they've never done hard work in their lives, but they didn't do enough hard work to deserve holding a microphone with millions of ears listening.
What sort of work do you need to do to get in that position then? When you say hard work, I mean, what are we talking here? What do you have to do? What's the difference between the work you've done and the work a blogger would do for these major websites? What is hard work then to get where you are?
Well, I'm not saying that they haven't done really hard work when it comes to writing and fighting for their career as a blogger, but they didn't do the DJ work. They didn't do the on-air work, in a lot of cases like mine, you know, the smaller market work and all that stuff, to earn the right to be a radio host. There are a lot of people who think they've earned a voice, and in some ways they have on the internet, but they didn't put in the grunt time, the internships, the small market radio, the learning the craft of radio and understanding of the business to really get this opinion on radio that they seem to have. I mean, you have cats out there declaring things about radio that I couldn't declare about radio, and I've been in it for 16 years. So it's like, I don't know where you're getting your information, because you haven't been in the business. I am in the business, have been for a long time. And I just don't think they've necessarily done that grunt work to earn such a strong opinion on how radio works.
Yeah. What about this? What about this equation, though, that those bloggers, or some of them that we're talking about here, have got just as many ears as, say, you have? Some of them, maybe even more eyes and ears.
That can be true. I mean, although, honestly, I think a lot of what we see on the internet traffic-wise is overstated and manipulated. But they don't have the captive ear that you have when you're playing music on the radio. You're getting, they have a specific audience who's already interested in what they're doing. Hot 97, we reach 2.5 million ears a week from people who are just in their car listening. So you have the power to affect those that are both really tuned in to what the hip-hop world is doing, and you have the casual ears of people who are just listening every day throughout the city, you know. And, you know, for me, as much as I enjoy doing internet work, I enjoy getting to reach that sort of mass audience of all kinds of people of all different backgrounds. Every day I hear from people and see different people who never touch a blog in their life but hear the words we say on the radio. Is that more important? I mean, like, that's up for other people to judge. But the thing is, I specifically pursued this craft, so obviously I have a real respect for what this medium reaches. And that's not to say that their medium isn't important. But there are a lot of people, let's be honest, there are people who have blogs who got there from, you know, who got into the internet game and were excited and started blogging, who didn't necessarily spend having to work through the political rigmarole of fighting your way through the music and radio business. Some people did. You know, a guy like Elliot Wilson worked for a long time in a lot of different places to get his blog and to have some influence in that blog. And, you know, I give credit where credit is due. But, you know, that doesn't mean you've earned the right to be on the radio. You see what I'm saying? He earned it as a writer, but a lot of cats, you hear them earn as a writer, and then they grab a mic and think they know how to be entertaining also. They don't realize there's this whole factor. It's not just about hip-hop, man. I barely have time to talk about hip-hop in the morning. I got to entertain people. I got to do contests. I got to deliver important information. There's a million different things that we have to do on the radio besides have fun hip-hop debates.
Let me ask you this then, Pete. Why should it matter for a radio show with a radio station to pay dues to get higher in the ranks and become quote-unquote major league, but when an artist like Trinidad James comes out rapping under a year with one project under his belt that's barely touching 30 minutes, he and the many artists like him, the props doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree. I said the same thing to Ebro. I mean, I agree with Ebro's argument almost down the board, except the fact of the matter is a guy like Trinidad James gets a shot because, A, he did, through his online world, which I guess we're using as the term minor leagues, he blew up. You know, he blew up. But I believe a guy like him only gets the opportunity because his music happens to fit into the kind of lowest common denominator crap that is really exciting to people these days. But Ebro said that. He said it's lowest common denominator. He admits that. And on radio, when you're reaching such a big, broad audience, like I just said, lowest common denominator works. I mean, it's one of the things you have to do, you know, to keep ears on. I mean, we have... Radio is, you're able to see what songs keep people listening, and that's what pays the bills. And the fact is, we see that a lot of those lowest common denominator songs are the ones, unfortunately, that keep ears on the box.
But had Trinidad James not come out with that video and supported a new single, would he have been heard?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a fan of that song. I don't. You know, I wish there's so many great New York artists who I wish would get the chance that Trinidad James is getting. So I have a tough time understanding exactly what was the tipping point for someone like him and why he gets to get the opportunity. But like I said, it's a combination of those things, and then the fact that the song is this catchy, basic chorus, you know, like so many songs that we've seen get big over the last decade.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Major League, of course, everyone knows now, anybody's been paying attention, everybody through the internet normally pay attention to these sort of things. The whole clash with Nicki Minaj, I feel it's done and done now. I'm sure that's how you're starting to feel. Things, I mean, you say you spoke to Sean Price. That seems like that's done now. What about Nicki Minaj? I saw the clip of your show with Ebro saying that she'd called him. That was the last I caught of it. Is it all resolved now? Is she ever going to appear on your show again?
I wouldn't count on it. I'm not going to hold my breath. I mean, she didn't, as I describe it, she didn't sort of, you know, listen, the original comment that happened was real and off the cuff, and it led to a dramatic situation with theatrics and excitement, and it was great for our ratings, and it was great for my name, and it was great for a conversation about hip-hop, but I thought it was very entertaining, and I wanted to entertain the people, and I wish that she understood that we were entertaining the people, and the way to resolve that in a way that would have excited people would have been for us to have a conversation, but she didn't want to do that.
And even more importantly, for people who are not fully aware of this situation, it was a case of she truly was offended that you said that Starlight wasn't a hip-hop record. I can't understand how any manager on this planet, no matter how you market something, could ever say that was hip-hop. It was as pop as Lady Gaga. In fact, that's who she wants to be. So I can't understand why she caught feelings on that, but she did, and I don't think in this call we're going to resolve why she did. But I think there are bigger reasons than just that, aren't there? I think there's some underlying reasons, maybe Hot 97 related reasons why she's made such a big point of this.
You making that comment really solidified the fact that hip-hop doesn't accept criticism, and I think that's one of our biggest problems, the fact that you knock something, you're labeled as a hater.
Yeah, especially when you're saying something that's really obvious to anyone with ears, you know? I mean, I certainly didn't say anything to reinvent the wheel. I simply pointed out that a pop song was a pop song. So, you know, I don't understand in what world she believes that could not be a pop song. You made it.
Yeah.
You know, you brought in the pop producer to make the pop song. Why are you then surprised when an underground hip-hop DJ thinks that it's pop? It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't at all. And of course, then the story goes, this is the narrative, that she then added, this is what some believe, that she then went away and a new album that came out, she added what she then classed to be straight up hip-hop tracks. I think they're about, was a six or something that she added. Bit unusual for her to do that. It wasn't all pop. It sells something like 36,000 copies. It's considered a flop by the industry. And then people point the finger at yourself. But like you say, this is entertainment. This is just like another thing that you love in this world, as we all know, the World Wrestling Federation. We all know about this. And so it is that, though. It's the pantomime. It's the script. It's the storyline. That's what you're running with this whole thing. But Nicki Minaj isn't. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, more or less, you know. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, my comments about her actually changed the conversation on, you know, actually ends up affecting her record sales, but I do think it is what eventually may have changed the conversation about her. And, you know, I think that could have had some effect on her, but I don't think it's, I wish I could take credit for that, but I don't think that's the reason that her album, you know, didn't do well.
No, absolutely. It's a much bigger picture than that. When it comes to yourself on Hot 97, then obviously, I mean, I think everybody with a brain can understand the reason why that anybody in this whole wide world would accept the show that you've got and the limelight you've got to do what you have to do in order to have your Sunday show as well. And we all know it went the other way around. You didn't start with your morning show, then get the Sunday show. It was the other way around. You worked your way up to that morning show. But have you ever refused, for whatever reason, to play a song on your morning show on Hot 97?
I have songs that I've fought against and that I've said, I really don't like this. Or when we play it, I even say on the air, I hate this song. This is terrible. Why are we playing this? I say things like that all the time. I mean, I'm very clear about that. But my job in the morning is something, you know, occasionally I get to choose music when I mix. But by and large, my job on the morning show is to be funny and entertaining. And that's what I look at it as. And then I look at my Sunday night shows where I get to have my musical outlet. And I don't really cross the lines with them. And I don't spend time really worrying about what we play in the morning, because I trust Ebro and I trust the people who make the decisions there based on what music works. And my job in the morning is to make sure advertisers want to spend money on the station and make sure listeners have a good time on their way to work. So I sneak in my opinions whenever I can, but I don't spend too much time concerned about the music. And I tell people if they want to hear what my taste in music is, they should tune in Sunday nights. And that's just the way I look at it. The only way I can survive is to separate it, because I wouldn't be able to make a living doing my Sunday night show, but I make a living doing the morning show. And, you know, I have two separate skill sets. You know, I have my passion for, you know, hip hop that I've always had, being a DJ for now. You know, this is going into my 20th year as a DJ, and I've always done that. And then, you know, probably my best skill though is being a host and being a funny host. And, you know, there's a time, I hope one day, when I'm doing very mainstream hosting that has nothing to do with hip hop, and I'm also doing my hip hop stuff on the side. So the hosting skill I almost see as a separate, that's more like my job skill set. And then my music taste is kind of my passion project. And I sort of look at them separately.
So Dub and Edge played for sure, absolutely. Now, you mentioned there were songs that you fought hard against to not be played. You know, we're going to ask what songs they were, Pete.
I mean, I can't remember specifically what they were, but you guys, if you asked me, I can tell you, but I mean, right. I don't know if I'd remember, but you could guess, and you could look at the playlist,
right,
and,
right.
You know, and I've certainly said, I've had conversations with Ebro many times where I've said things like, do we really have to play this much on money? Mm. Like, do we really, there was a time when, and it's not quite like this as much today, but if you go back 6 months, certainly if you go back 18 months, you know, it was Drake, Wayne, and Nicki on every song being played. Mm. Every song. And it's not that I think they're not deserving of time or to be on the radio, but it's just about the diversity. And I was always just hoping we could have more diversity on the radio. And I think that's what the main argument that was had last week was about, you know. But my biggest problem about what started that argument, which was with P-Dot, the blogger from Rap Radar, was that he's having this conversation, yet, you know, the only thing him and I really don't see eye to eye about is that he doesn't like any of the people that I consider really good anyway. So, like, I don't even know, guys like him, I don't even know what songs they're pushing for, because, you know, the artists who I consider probably the three best, most talented guys with the best potential in hip hop right now, he doesn't even think are good. So I don't even know where to begin to have that conversation. If we don't even agree on what good hip hop is, it's a kind of a separate conversation.
Yeah, I mean, listening to your show, like I have done, you must be relieved when, of course, in Hot 97, hip-hop and R&B, you must be relieved when a pure R&B, if we call it that anymore, track comes on, because you don't have to think anymore. You can take your headphones off and go, well, this, I don't even need to think, this is R&B. This, I don't even pass judgment on this. But it's all that other, that kind of middle of the row, which is surely to your ears and our ears as well, is not hip-hop, vaguely, but it's being played in Hot 97, because that's, like you say, you need the commercials, you need the money, but you must be relieved when that R&B or, you know, pop song comes along. But I have noticed Hot 97, that, and I know you're going to say it's what the people want, but there's hardly any hip-hop at all on Hot 97 in the day now. I mean, I know a million people have said that in the past, but there is hardly any hip-hop whatsoever. It's all R&B.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of rap songs. It's not the kind of hip-hop that I would define as, you know, true hip-hop. But, I mean, there are rap records getting played. It's just they're all sort of the same, or a lot of them are very similar. So, I mean, I would argue that they're still rap songs. They still technically fit in hip-hop. I just would say it's not the kind of hip-hop that... It's not the only hip-hop that should exist.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as you've gone through your career, man, I mean, it's a career which has dwarfed pretty much everybody out there in hip-hop, in mainstream sort of entertainment industry in hip-hop and urban entertainment out there in the United States. Have things changed in terms of why you're doing this? Now, you're probably going to say no, but what is more important to you now, the progression of the music or you being famous? Has that changed at all, that shift?
I don't know, probably. I mean, I'm sure. I think being honest, you know, I'd say right now they're sort of equal. You know, I mean, I want to be able to have a career, and I want to be able to make money and be able to live off of it you know, forever and never have to get a real job. So I would say certainly that it's important. It's very, you know, I care. I mean, more or less what you're asking is, am I more satisfied if, you know, Joey Badass gets famous or whether I get famous? Yeah, I probably root for myself even more than I root for Joey Badass. Mm-hmm. And I love Joey Badass. But I'd probably, you know, prioritize my own success more. But that said, what I tried to do was work hard so those things are not mutually exclusive. And so our success, you know, my success then turns around and helps those artists, you know, and that's really what I've wanted, is that as my name gets bigger and as I get, you know, like, for example, let's say one day I get to do, you know, big mainstream network television, you know, I hope that I'm able to develop an audience that then turns around and follows me, and I'm able to put on some really good stuff. And the only thing I can guarantee, I certainly can't say that I'm, you know, such a true school hip-hop person that I care more about that than my own success, but I will say that no matter what my success is, and hopefully it'll, you know, I'll achieve everything I want to, that I will never change in terms of what I'm interested in and what I love to do and what I try to put people onto. That's for sure.
For sure. Now, whatever happens, whatever has happened, I think that the main point is that your success has always included this duality of responsibility in that success. Now, you were noble enough to have challenged a few artists earlier this year about the effects of drink driving and maintaining responsibility in hip-hop. I mean, how do you feel about, you know, this recent trend of popping Molly and radio presenters glorifying this use recently?
I mean, I can't understand it. You know, I remember, you know, when we saw a video recently of our competition station saying one of the jocks talking to an artist about the first time they popped Molly, me and Ebro looked at each other. I was like, literally the exact same moment we looked at each other, we were just like, what? We were just like, what part of the game is that? I mean, listen, you know, we want to be, everyone wants to be cool, everyone wants to be, you know, down with the artist, but the thing is, we're different. We're not artists. We're not, you know, we're people who communicate directly with the audience and directly with the kids and are supposed to be a voice of reason. So the idea of saying publicly out loud that you do drugs like that to me, I mean, I think it's irresponsible for artists, and I think it's even more irresponsible if you're a presenter or a host, you know, someone who's supposed to be reasonable to support that. I mean, I just think it is absolute cornball. Like, it's, you know, that is being thirsty. It is just desperation to be down with the artist to even, you know, propagate something like that.
I'm glad you think so, P. I'm glad you think so. Like I say, it was really a noble move, as I say, for you to have brought up the topic of drink driving on your show a couple of months ago and confronted artists, excuse me, like Wiz Khalifa and such. I feel like that was very admirable of you, and it's something I feel, like I said, has always coincided in your career, that responsibility. Do you think that the concept of accountability within the culture is losing its place? I mean, I think that, you said it yourself, as a collective, we have the tendency to blame these labels and other people. But I think too often we find it a hard time when we analyze ourselves as a culture and take a step back and really ask ourselves what we're doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of times no one wants to stop and say, like, hey, artists also know what's the difference between wrong and right. And, you know, my main... the thing about drinking and driving as an issue is, you know, obviously I ended up being personally affected by it when my wife's brother was killed by a drunk driver. But it made me just start looking at the whole issue. And I remember saying right after it happened, I said, you know, I can understand artists kind of wanting to say that they drink. And maybe that's part of their life. So they like mentioning it. Okay, I can get that. You know, you have to understand, I've always been an anti-drinking kind of person. Now, as a grown-up, I've drank some. You know, now I you know, I'm going to a party tonight, or I'll have a ride, and there's a chance I'll have a couple of drinks. But I've never been a big drinker. I mean, I can count the amount of times I've been drunk, probably on one hand. You know, like, I'm not a big drinker. Mm. So I've always felt that way. And then when after the accident with my brother-in-law happened, I started looking at the situation. I just said, if you want to show off about drinking, okay. But how could you ever show off about drinking and driving? Like, it was one of those situations of absolute, you know, blind stupidity. You know, that artists, when artists do that, you know, A, there's no upside to drinking and driving. B, the artists aren't even telling the truth. You know, they're not even actually dumb enough to drink and drive. They have drivers. They don't even drink and drive. They wouldn't actually do it, which in a weird way makes it even worse that you would tell other people who are driving themselves, like, hey, don't worry about it. Have a drink. Drive. A, how wrong that is to yourself and to all the other innocent people that could be harmed by you. But they don't even do that themselves. They would never make that decision for themselves or their loved ones. So why would you ever say it in a way that could influence kids? And more often than not, I'm happy when I bring up the conversation and we get to talk about it, but I still feel like more often than not, people make excuses and they're like, oh, it's a metaphor, it's this, and I'm like, you know, it doesn't sound that way to the listeners. It just sounds like you're saying it's cool.
And exactly, and this is all part of this big string of ignorance. And I won't, it's not a new topic to talk about how the artists now and the labels are designing artists and putting artists out there that are totally dumb, totally ignorant. They're appealing to young, normally white kids, very young, impressionable kids as well, and they're promoting ignorance. Now, of course, you remember, as I do, a day when ignorance was could still be intelligent in music. I'm talking N.W.A., I'm talking Ghetto Boys, I'm talking, you saw behind it, you saw these were characters, you saw what the ideal was of this ignorance, but now there's no character in Chief Keef. There's no character behind these artists that are coming out with a shirt off and that... tattoos. I'm sounding like an old man. I am now, but I am getting to that point now. I'm looking at it and thinking, it isn't me who's being affected, it's the kids. They're the ones watching this, because there's no punchline, there's no resolve. There was always a resolve in a Scarface song back in the 90s. There was always that bit that twisted at the end and showed you that if you do this, that's bad. That's gone now. That's gone completely. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. And there are very few characters. You know, a lot of times people have asked me, they said, well, you feel that way about this, but why don't you feel that way about, you know, Odd Future or Tyler the Creator, for example? And I say, the difference with Tyler is he actually is being theatrical. You know, there's a bigger picture that's theatrical. People know Tyler the Creator is not tying people up and raping them. It's the same with Eminem. You know, I don't say the same thing about Eminem or Tyler. These are people who are painting a picture. They're more like horror movie directors. You know, look at this crazy art that I'm making. But that, to me, I can find the artistic value in. When you're making a song that is not painting a picture of a false reality, but you're actually really portraying this as a potentially realistic life, you know, that is what my problem is. And it was the same thing with NWA. I mean, you know, yeah, maybe if you were really young, like I was when I first heard them, I didn't necessarily, because I was, you know, 8 years old, I didn't understand quite how theatrical it was. But now listening to it as an adult, even by the time I was a teenager, it was obvious that, you know, they weren't driving down the street literally just killing people. doesn't even make sense. So, there was a level of theatrics back then, and now it's just like, you're talking about drugs, you're talking about drinking, but the videos that you're making are really just attempting to portray that, and it's just disappointing, and it's just lazy. Like, the whole Molly thing is so lazy. Like, that drug, I first heard about that drug, 10 years ago, and it almost kind of faded out of the sort of mainstream consciousness, and then someone in hip-hop got into it, and now it's like every rapper is talking about popping mollies, and they're lying. They're A, lying, and B, it's just so basic. It's so basic and lazy. Like, no one seems to want to push the envelope at all, and it's just disappointing when you see it. And yeah, I sound old too, and guess what, I am old, but it is how I feel, and I know there's a growing amount of younger people who feel the same way. I don't think it's just old fogies like us.
Exactly, and it's more than that. The laziness spreads to names now. Have you noticed in York, because you'll be more aware than of anybody, as you see names of new artists coming through, particularly those that have been put on your table to play Hot 97, don't you feel the names have become lazy of artists now? You know, we're talking, there's just no creativity. Forget the music, but even the actual brand of the artist itself. You know, I'm finding some names which are, I mean, I know this sounds strange, but Aesop Rock, we all know and love Aesop Rock. He's been around for years, a legend. You know, we really love his music and everything he's ever done. And then we get Aesop Rocky. You know,
well, I'm going to say this. I truly believe that based on what Aesop Rock did, I think there's a pretty solid chance that Rocky did not know who Aesop Rock was. I think. That's my personal opinion. I got to ask him this, but I believe that, you know, the whole crew is called ASAP. And I think we can all agree that that probably has nothing to do with ASAP. It probably has more to do with the phrase ASAP and what it means. So my assumption is that Rocky did not know who Aesop Rock was, only because he operated in such a different world. Like, you know, the regular New York hip-hop kid from Harlem really has no idea who Aesop Rock is. Mm. So I would say in that case, I don't necessarily agree. But I will say generally down the board, yes, the overall brands, names, everything is just pretty lazy top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like in wrestling every once in a while, you know, there's a name that comes along where I can tell the writers made up the name because they copied it off of two other names. It's very common in wrestling. But in wrestling, there's no real shame in doing that because, you know, again, wrestling blatantly is going for the common denominator with regards to stuff like that. So, like, they'll just take a famous athlete's name and a famous actor's name. The first name from one, the last name from the other, they put it together and they go, those are two famous names, let's go with that. Mm. But the idea of doing that in hip-hop with your own name that you create with yourself for yourself is seen as nuts to me.
Exactly. Sorry for not being clear with what I said there. I wasn't referring to the fact that Aesop Rocky would have copied Aesop Rock, but it's the fact that what an insult to the career of Aesop Rock in the sense that nobody had heard of him and nobody cared. And nobody who would have been told in retrospect have made any effort to change Aesop Rocky's name, because that's what Aesop Rock means to the world and what it means to what was labeled recently by your own show, the Major League. If Aesop Rock's minor league, the Major League doesn't even care they've got a similar name. I'm not saying they copied the name. I'm just saying there's just
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
I hear what you're saying.
There's no awareness.
I got to ask him that. I wonder. I'm sure at this point someone has brought it up with him. But no one had that conversation publicly. No one comes out and says, hey, you know, there already is someone who's done that. You know, whether you're copied or not, okay, that's fine. But the conversation should be had. You know, because it is someone who's contributed to hip-hop for a long time. And, yeah, I certainly see that point.
I mean, with regards to this division we're talking about between underground and mainstream, while we're talking about Aesop Rocky, I was interested to have seen recently Danger Mouse credited as a producer on his upcoming album. I mean, for me, it's pretty exciting, you know, when he got Danger Mouse. I think the last hip-hop project he was involved with was... What was it? What was it? I mean, it was a long time ago, that's what I'm saying. So for him to be involved in this project says a lot to me.
No, well, I mean, you know, I saw Rocky the other night at a Big Boy concert here in the city, and I was telling him that, you know, his lineup for his album looks really big. You know, it's like he worked hard and he got an opportunity, and he's really crafted himself in this great way where, I don't know, he's put himself in this really interesting high-end category, which is pretty crazy for a new artist. And you can tell when you look at the lineup of features and producers he has that he's really putting together one of those albums that could be nominated for Grammys and could reach a lot of people while potentially, hopefully, still holding on to a lot of that, you know, Harlem hip-hop flavor that kind of made him himself. I mean, I think Goldie is a great hip-hop record. And then, you know, he's got a song with Skrillex on there that I'm sure is going to sound like something different altogether. So, you know, he does have a very exciting and different-looking lineup that I think makes him seem even more major. Yeah. You know, he's done a great job. Aesop Rocky's done a great job putting his whole movement together. And I will say, I don't normally mention things like this on the air because they're so behind the scenes, but he is also, I mean, as humble and good a kid, you would not believe. For someone who's popping the way he is, the way he carries himself is almost shocking.
That's,
you know,
really,
he is a cool kid.
That's interesting you should say that, because really my next question leads to that. In the sense that it's always been known, people in the media, including yourself, DJs, people who do video interviews, even to some extent people who, you know, work on blogs and that sort of thing, relationship with the artist that you interview. I mean, What has your relationships been like with artists over the years? Has it now got to the point where they've not just been guests on your show, or has it got to the point where they come on your show and they're friends first? In other words, I think in radio in particular, we can kind of get duped into the fact that maybe we feel we are friends with a lot of people that appear on our shows, but in fact we aren't. We're just a medium for them to sell records, is what I'm saying, Peter. I mean, is that division gone now for you? Are you best friends with all these people, or is that never, ever gone?
No, I mean,
are you still just the DJ?
By and large, you're right. I mean, you know, and I think it is easy to get confused and think a certain thing, and you don't realize how much it's a business relationship until you're not on the radio anymore, or until they don't need you. And then you remember, you know, oh yeah, you're just a means to an end. And I guess what, that's what I guess stood out to me. I'm not close with Rocky at all. You know, we don't talk. We spoke very early on, and you know, he's just a great example. And all my relationship with artists are different. And I have some people that I consider a friend. I have some people that I would, you know, pick up the phone and check in on them, or at least send them a text. I don't call many people on the phone, period, but at least send them a text and just like, yo, bro, how are you? What's going on? And then you have some people that you just have a pleasant rapport with. And then you have the people who, you know, the relationship is simply, I'm here to promote when I'm not here to promote. That's it. But Rocky was particularly cool because I've only met him in person a couple of times. And basically what happened was when the mixtape first came out, you know, shortly thereafter, I ended up hitting him up and talking to him about, you know, a few different things. And I ended up cleaning the song Peso, and he basically asked me for it and was like, hey, you know, could I have that? And so I gave him, you know, it was a really simple favor, but I cleaned up the song and gave him a clean copy of the song, and, you know, I was playing it early on. But then after playing it a few times, you know, he got so big so fast that I really didn't play him that much. You know, it wasn't really the right fit. And then the first time I saw him, which wasn't until Summer Jam, you know, months after he'd become this big local star, you know, when I saw him, he, like, bum-rushed me and was like, dude, I'll never forget that you did that. You know, it wasn't that big a deal. And when I saw him the other day, it was the same thing. Like, he really is respectful. You know, and I don't see that as, like, it's because I'm so cool. It's not at all. It's because he's a respectful kid who's appreciative. And to me, he said, of course, well, you know, why would I forget that? I said, you'd be surprised. You know, there are plenty of artists that I've done a lot more for than I've done for you who don't even, when you see them, you have to reintroduce yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends. You know, there are people who truly become friends because we're like-minded people who are in the same business, and then you become buddies. And then there are people that, you know, are just people you work with. But, you know, I got married this summer, and the only artists at my wedding were The Kid Daytona and Homeboy Sandman. Mm-hmm. Those were the and Camber from Low Budget Crew, and my boy Quartermain, who just dropped an album, by the way, that's incredible. But I wasn't counting them at first because we're friends forever. They're from my crew in D.C. But as far as the guys I've met since I came to New York, it was just Daytona and Homeboy Sandman. You know, those are people who know my wife and come to my home and things like that. But and there are other people like that. Asher Roth is a close friend. You know, he comes over, we hang out and spend time talking about music and spend time talking about other sports and regular life, and I know his family and vice versa. Mm. So there are examples of that, but, you know, by and large, it's all BS.
And on the same note then, as we get to round up now, how important is the personality of an artist that you've never met? So that they've got this hot record out, as you call it out there in America, hot record, whatever that means. And then, of course, they come on your show, you interview them. How important is the personality and the way they carry themselves in an interview when you first meet them in terms of then what you think of their music? In other words, have you ever looked at an artist and thought, this guy's average, he's coming on the show tomorrow. He comes on the show, he's the nicest guy you ever met, he's very respectful, and then suddenly you start to feel his music more. You naturally, honestly start to feel his music because he was a nice guy on your show. What I'm saying to all the big artists, the major league ones out there, how important is it the way they conduct themselves when they come into your studio?
You know, there's no question. If I get an artist that I'm on the fence on and he comes in and acts like a douchebag, then there's no chance I'm going to give him a second chance. Why bother? If I was on the fence, you know, for example, Trinidad James came in a couple weeks ago. I had no interest. I don't like All Gold Everything. I told him I didn't like All Gold Everything. But I liked the way he carried himself, enough that when I went home, I listened to his whole project, and I contacted him about it and told him what I liked and didn't like. You know, it was enough that by him being a humble, cool person who was open to criticism, I thought, well, this is a person who's worth me taking the time to listen to. Mm. And that's human nature. You know, I mean, an artist, you're going to get a lot further. Mm. You know, I mean, Wale is a great example of Wale. For a long time, a lot of people didn't like his personality. You know, when he first came out, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And I think that's a big reason why the first time around, he never got it going. Mm. And then he kind of got, you know, figured some things out, and I think just got happier in his life in general. And I think the second run he had, he's much more successful because he became much more personable. And I think that's great growth and is necessary. If you plan on lasting in this business, listen, you're going to see me at the radio station. Then you might have an interview with me for MTV. Then maybe one day when we doing something else, we're going to keep running into each other. If you have a successful career. And that's one thing that, you know, the short-minded, the close-minded artists don't understand. They think that they're at the top and we need them. You know, like even in Nicki Minaj, for example, she's on top right now. So she can treat me any which way she sees fit and doesn't think it'll ever matter, because as far as our worlds go right now, I'm nothing compared to her. And that's fine. But my career has been a steady growth since I was 17 years old. And every year, it's higher than it was the year before. Mm. I question how often that happens with artists. It's not very common.
Yeah, definitely.
Usually, in my career, and I'm only 33 years old, but in my career, I've seen people become stars and treat me like crap, and then I've seen them on the way down begging me for interviews. Trust me, it happens with everyone. And they seem to think that the ones who are gassed seem to think that it all starts and ends with them, and don't realize that, I don't know if you know this, but my career is not ending because I didn't like your music. So we might as well have a friendly relationship, because we may bump into each other again. But they, you know, the ones who don't understand that are the ones who are going to have short careers.
Absolutely. And of course, on another note, you must have been in that situation which me and Menace have now and again have found ourselves in, where you've had your heart sort of broken a little bit by artists that you grew up on, that you've actually finally got to interview, and then you've kind of left feeling, oh, you had that awful feeling like that didn't go too well. They weren't how I imagined they would be. And now when you hear all the classic records, you kind of listen to them a different light, or they all remind you of the interview you did with them. I always find that when we're doing this show, now and again, if you get a certain artist, the legend, for example, you didn't expect them to be quite as like that, and then when you listen to those classic songs, you always remember the interview. You must have had that numerous times. In other words, what I'm saying, do songs now prompt memories of interviewing artists in your life?
Yeah, instead of what it originally made you feel.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it's definitely happened. You know, I mean, sometimes over time you kind of forget about it and just like, yeah, whatever, and you say, oh, that guy's a jerk, but I love the song. Mm. But sometimes, you know, depending on how bad the experience is, you know, it certainly can. And you know, especially these days, you know, if you're in the business like you guys and myself both can be, of interviewing guys who maybe we really admire them, but their best days are behind them, they're not always in the best mood. They're not always so excited. They're not always so appreciative. Mm. And a lot of times they feel underappreciated, or, you know, and I know what happens. I bump into artists sometimes. Listen, sometimes I bump into legendary artists who I can tell are disappointed that I don't recognize them on site. When, if they just told me who they were, I'd geek out and be like, oh my God, but I may not recognize them because I'm not thinking about them that moment, or they look different.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, for better or for worse, I am more visible to them right now than they are to me. Mm-hmm. So they're like, hey, Rosenberg. And I'm like, hey. And they're like, oh. And they that could seem kind of dejected. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, dude, oh my God, I'm a huge fan. I would do anything for you that you asked. You know, what do you need? I'll help you out. But they may already feel some sort of way because, like I said, maybe it's not their A-day and they have a chip on their shoulder to start out with. So that can, you know, that can be disappointing, especially when you're like, oh man, I don't think of you in the way that you're thinking of yourself. Like, sometimes they think of themselves as sort of, like, not hot anymore, and you're thinking, like, oh, man, this person will always be hot to me.
And, of course, their insecurities come through in the way they act in the interview, and, like, it can sometimes be very difficult. They can be, like, interviewing, you know, a new artist that's giving you yes or no answers, and I think you put it perfectly there. I think it's definitely the psychology of it. Listen, Peter Rosenberg, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you once more, but before we bounce out, of course, Christmas on the way, the end of the year, I mean, 2012, in terms of hip-hop, highlights for yourself. I mean, what have been some of the highlights this year in terms of not just the music, but the whole culture, really, this in 2012?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I always get so confused by the end of the year, what the hell happened this year. For me, I think the return of Earl Sweatshirt was very exciting. You know, I was at his first performance. That was awesome. And then I booked him for his first gig at my birthday party. His first official gig was at my birthday, and that was awesome. And I think his single right now, Chum, is just fantastic. I think the emergence of Joey Badass and his 1999 mixtape was awesome. That was a cool moment. And, you know, the Nicki Minaj situation was a highlight. It was an exciting time. It was an exciting conversation to have. You know, Syph and I said that we're no longer talking about that after January 1st. It's officially over. Mm. How much it comes up, we are done talking about it. But it was an exciting part of this year, you know, that I think, you know, my claim to fame will be if I at least make it into the Skills year wrap-up. Like, if I at least make it into Skills year wrap-up song, then I had a big year. But before I go, I have to flip the script and ask you guys a question.
Sure, go on. Yeah, what is the question?
As fine UK hip-hop enthusiasts, I don't know if you saw the interview, but if you did you have any thoughts on when someone who I believe to be an actual friend and good relationship in the business, the one and only Tim Westwood, turned his interview with Nicki Minaj into a suck fest where he acted as if he didn't know me at all and basically trashed me to her? Anyone catch that?
Yeah, I didn't
see that, but I can believe it. It doesn't surprise me.
I heard about that, and then I went and sought that out. I think to defend Tim West, because Tim Westwood, as you can imagine, Pete, I grew up on that man's radio shows, even before Radio 1, way before. I think, as you know, the man's had to survive. He's done brilliant, and it's awful patronising to say this, but at his age, to still stay relevant to whoever, as you said, getting as many years as possible is important, and he's been doing that. I don't feel he is the DJ once was, and he knows that. I feel now he's just a character. He's just become a character, a parody, almost a pastiche of himself. And part of that pastiche is that kind of crazy uncle that you invite, that nobody wants to invite to the wedding, but he turns up anyway. And he does that, and the kids somehow out here find that amusing, but it is only the kids that find it amusing. So I think that's what he was doing there, and I think he didn't ever really think beyond his listeners, who are all 12 or 13, who were listening at that time, who probably don't never heard of you, let's be honest, in this country, they're 12. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was thinking beyond that. And I think that's just what he went for. That moment in time, let's try and get a giggle. Let's act like the crazy uncle at the wedding again. I'm Tim Westwood. And that's what I think that's as deep as it went, Peter. I don't know. How did you feel about it?
Yeah.
I mean, I was offended by it. You know, I definitely was like, that was probably the only thing that happened during that entire thing that made me sort of cringe and be like, oh, what? Because, I mean, you know, I know that doesn't mean he hates me. You know, I'm not saying that. I'm sure he still likes me. But that's kind of all the more reason why I felt so crappy, because when he brought it up, he's like, oh, you know, and these DJs out there saying things, blah, 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 and, you know, who do they think they are? And blah, and I'm like, who do they think they are? You know who I am. What are you talking about? You know, this is a guy who came in and sat in on me and Syph's show for a week, every day, hung out with us every day for a week. He's known Cypher for years. Him and Cypher have been friends. I mean,
they used to do the rap exchange, him and Westwood, back in the day. I remember that, man.
Exactly. Westwood used to have him on. Syph would mix in the UK all the time, and they were very tight. So, you know, even out of respect to Syph, it was just like, but I have a relationship with him too, you know, and he's always been cool to me. So, you know, it's not like if I saw him, I'd be like, yo, what's up, Westwood? But I did email him. I didn't really get a response. I was just kind of like, what was up with that?
That's right, because
I didn't really get a response that made any sense of it.
And it is true, I mean, because I remember Tim Westwood at that stage, and he was really quite shy on Radio 1. He was the new guy, and then, of course, he made the New York hookup with Funkmaster Flex, but then Cypher Sounds. And I'm not going to be patronizing, because Tip West was not on the call with us now, but I did feel at the time that he was feeding off Cypher Sounds in terms of, look how hip-hop I am, look how hip-hop this show is, how credible we are, this show, we're now with Cypher Sounds. So the guy actually built his career a lot on Cypher Sounds, and I know this wasn't about Cypher Sounds, it was about yourself, but it was strange. I thought you'd see it for what it was, and who Westwood is now, but you actually took that to heart, is what you're saying, effectively. You took that to heart.
Yeah, I did. I mean, you're right. You know, I'm sure in the moment, no, I know what it was. In the moment, Westwood is, he's a legend, and he's helped make a lot of people's careers, and I take nothing away from him. I guess right now he's at a place where the fact that he's got a relationship with Nicki Minaj is obviously more important than his relationship with me. So, if at my expense he can buddy up more to Nicki Minaj and get a laugh or get whatever it may be, you know, I understand why he put value in that.
Yeah.
But you know, there's no way I don't think any of us would argue that doing something like that shows an incredible amount of moral fiber. How about that?
Exactly. If it's any consolation, though, in one of his other recent interviews, I think he had Kendrick Lamar up in the studio, and he was doing his usual interview. I'm not going to knock Westwood because it's not fair. He's not on the call. But he did his usual sort of like no script interview. And then he just got so reckless with the whole thing, he ended up swinging his arms around, and he swung his arm back and punched Kendrick Lamar's DJ in the face. And instead of editing that from the video of the interview and saying, what an awful mistake, I'm so sorry, they looped it. And they kept looping him, punching his DJ in the face. And that's the reckless level, really, I think, of Westwood's production team at the moment. I feel they set him up. I think he is quite reckless now. And I think his production team pushed that and go, yeah, that was funny, Westwood. Let's just loop it for the world. It's so awkward to watch a lot of Westwood's interviews at the moment. And I think he would agree as well. So don't take it to heart too much, man. I think that guy is really trying to keep a career alive.
Shouts to Uncle Tim.
Listen, man, it's been an absolute pleasure once again.
Yes, I'm sure it'll be fine. But you're right. I'm not gonna take it too to heart. I'm gonna be all right tonight. I'm gonna make sure I don't cry tonight about Uncle Tim doing me wrong with Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just get those tears from Nicki Minaj. She might never ever come on your show now, Peter. That's it. You've blown your chances. You're not gonna have a Minaj on your show. But you've got to live with that now and just keep your career building every year, like you said. Peter Rosenberg, thank you so much for taking the time out once again. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Any shout outs, anything you want to promote then before we get to bounce out of here?
No, not much. Nothing really, man. I wish I had a gig to plug in the UK, but I don't. So check out all my stuff on Hot 97 and YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. And that's it, man. Love talking to you guys.
All right, peace.